Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Denneton. Each week, I bring you new guests to talk about exciting new topics in this very fascinating and wide universe that we live in. And tonight, our subject is actually a very profound and important one. It's spiritual enlightenment, something I think we are all seeking, at least on some level. And our guest tonight is Stephen Bodian, who has written a fascinating new book called Wake Up Now, A Guide to the Journey of Spiritual Awakening. Now, of course, there are many books out there about enlightenment, but this book is unique in that it offers comprehensive guidance on the awakening journey free of religious jargon and dogma. This book actually challenges many of our commonly held beliefs about spiritual traditions, practices, and it offers really a more direct, spontaneous, and stress-free approach to finding lasting peace, love, and happiness through spiritual awakening. And the book actually reveals how enlightenment is not some faraway dream that we are constantly seeking for, but actually an ever-present reality that is always available to us in every moment. And our guest, Stephen Bodian, he's quite accomplished, has been teaching this direct approach to spiritual awakening for more than 35 years. He is a founder and director for the School of Awakening, in which he teaches classes and seminars and various other things that you can go to explore this subject. He was ordained a Zen monk in 1974 and has studied under many great spiritual masters and has, of course, studied all these very exciting spiritual works that have been written throughout the ages, and has had some remarkable awakenings in his life, and actually has received the Dharma Transmission, which is the authorization to teach, from Adyashanti. Hopefully you can tell us more about that. He is the former editor-in-chief of Yoga Journal and the author of the best-selling guidebook, Meditation for Dummies, and co-author of Buddhism for Dummies. He's a psychotherapist as well as a spiritual teacher and has been a pioneer, actually, in the integration of the timeless spiritual wisdom of the East and the insights of the Western psychology. He does have a website if you want to find out more about him. It's his name, stephenbodian.org. And that's basically who we're talking to tonight. Stephen, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Preston. Yeah, nice to be here.
Well, I'm so excited, and I have to tell you that, you know, I have been very, very interested in spiritual enlightenment for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Probably most strongly after my mom died, which hit me really hard. I didn't believe in life after death, anything like that, but one thing led to another, and I got very interested in spirituality and started doing exercises and meditations and reading all the great works and really had a bunch of what I would call mini enlightenments. I learned how to do astral travel and started having a lot of precognition and things like this, and have just been just in love with the subject ever since, and I'm reading everything I can find on it, from the Butler's Lives of the Saints to you know, the Gospel of Ramakrishna and the autobiography of a yogi, anything I can get my hands on. So your book was, wow. I can't tell you how much I really enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad. Thank you.
So, spiritual enlightenment. Now, for everyone out there listening, I mean, how would you define spiritual enlightenment? I mean, to me, it's realizing the full potentials of who we are, I guess, would be the best way.
Well, there are, of course, many different ways of talking about it, depending, you know, for example, the word awakening is used, you know, in many different ways. We can awaken to Kundalini, we can awaken to the astral realm, we can awaken our sexuality. I mean, so the word awakening is, you know, a very commonly used word, particularly in the New Age. But what I'm specifically talking about in this book is spiritual awakening as it's understood in the Eastern traditions of, let's say, Zen or Buddhism, Advaita Vedanta, the Hindu tradition, which is awakening is the realization of our essential spiritual nature. It's not personal awakening. It's not awakening to our potential as a person. It's awakening beyond the personal to our identity, you could say, with the ground of being, with the source of everything. So that is what awakening is from the perspective that I'm discussing in the book. And it's different from what people usually think of as spiritual experiences, because there are all kinds of spiritual experiences you can have. You know, you can have experiences of unconditional love, you can have experiences of merging with you know, the universe, of, you know, all kinds. But the question behind spiritual awakening is, who is experiencing that? You know, we have all these great experiences, but who is this I who claims to experience it? And it's when we discover who this I is that we really awaken.
Right, right. You know, I know I'm totally excited about what you're saying, because I've always felt that, you know. I mean, some of the phrases in your book were really just so profound. One that really struck me was a thought that I had, which was that all thought is in some sense delusion, mm-hmm. which kind of echoed what some of the other spiritual masters were saying in your book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the whole theme of your book is that we are already there, and that
that's
we are
right.
the truth.
That's
and
right.
So, and that's what I found most fascinating. So, like meditation, this is I think a lot of the enlightened masters talk a lot about meditation and seem to support it and recommend it.
Yes.
And yet, I was very interested to read what you wrote. And there's a flip side to meditation. I mean, could you talk more about that?
Well, meditation is a wonderful practice. You know, I did it, of course, for many years as a Zen monk, and even after that. There's a drawback to meditation, which, of course, like any kind of seeking, can be that we use meditation as a way to achieve something that we believe we don't already have, or to become something we believe we aren't already.
Right.
And in that process of trying to get something out there that we don't already have, that we aren't already, we then create or reinforce the sense that we aren't there already, and that we're imperfect, and that we need improvement, and that we need something else that we don't already have. So it creates a sense of impoverishment, a sense of striving, and a sense of goal orientation, which just takes us away from the simplicity of just being here now in this moment, awake, present, aware. This presence, this awareness, this radiant wakefulness, which is always experiencing life through this body and mind, that is who we are. And all we need to do is turn our awareness back upon itself and discover that. We don't have to go on a prolonged journey. And I think that's where some of the meditative traditions can be misleading. I think at the heart of all these great meditation traditions, there is this understanding that I'm expressing now. For example, Tibetan Buddhism, there is the Dzogchen tradition, which is the direct approach. In the Eastern kind of Chinese and Japanese Buddhism, there's Zen, which is also the direct approach. So in the Hindu tradition, there's Advaita. So in all of them, there's this core teaching. But sometimes the more popular expressions can be very misleading.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, there's all these stories in Zen Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism and the Eastern religions of people who become enlightened in an instant.
That's right.
The sound of a lark singing a song, or
you know,
an apple falling off of a tree, or what have you.
That's right.
And so is enlightenment, I mean, is there like one great spiritual enlightenment, or wouldn't you say it's more logical that there's a progression of continuing enlightenments that goes on?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question, and I tried to address that in my book. Generally, everyone's different. for some people, the process of awakening, and I prefer to use the awakening because enlightenment has become so overused in a certain way.
Okay.
Plus, I like the metaphor of awaken, because really what you do is you awaken out of the dream of being a separate self, and then you awaken to the reality of, you could say, oneness.
Right.
The various practices that people do can again give them the impression that there's something that needs to be achieved. But awakening can be gradual for some people. Some people, Suzuki Roshi, who was one of my teachers, said that sometimes awakening is like walking in the fog. You know, gradually you get wet, and you don't even notice it. And next thing you know, you're soaking wet, you know. For some people, awakening is like that. Little by little, their eye is opened, you know, their wisdom eye is opened. For other people, it happens in an instant, you know, a sudden, surprising, unexpected aha, in which the world really turns inside out or upside down. Your accustomed way of seeing things gets kind of basically turned inside out. You see the world in an entirely different way, and that happens in an instant. And it's quite shocking to the mind, but, you know, when it's recognized, there's almost inevitably a sense of course, this is what it is, of course, you know. Somehow, deep inside, I knew it all along. And yet, to the mind, it's a shock. So, for many people, it occurs that way, but still, even when it occurs that way, for most people, there's a process that follows awakening. Sometimes it involves further awakenings, further clarifications of the awakenings that have already taken place. One of the metaphors I use in the book is like a zip file. You know, in a computer, you may get a zip file, which is a condensed file, which you then need to unpack, you know, unzip. So my experience, for example, of awakening was there was a tremendous amount of insight that was downloaded in a nanosecond, you know. And it actually took me years to really fully recognize what I had realized, you know,
wow.
To fully understand it. Even though it was all downloaded, you know, in an instant, it took years for it to really clarify. So that's actually pretty common. So even though there's an awakening, a very clear awakening, there may be many years of clarification, integration. Again, it's not like we're going somewhere else during this time. Not like we're, you know, it's just that what we've already seen clarifies, you know.
Right, right. Well, another thing I liked about your book, I mean, was the way you talked about that, and there was one story in there which I thought was really interesting about a man who was very interested in dragons.
Yes.
Constantly seeking dragons.
Yes.
And finally found one and realized that, you know, this was not exactly what he had thought it was.
Right, yeah.
So enlightenment can be,
right.
Like you said, very shocking. And for me, you know, I started having, you know, some of these spiritual experiences, and, like, one that comes to my mind is lucid dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started having what I would call awakenings, and I was hit with a really profound sense of loss.
Mm.
Actually, and of
mm-hmm.
loneliness, because
mm-hmm.
everything I thought I knew was
mm-hmm.
kind of an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it
yeah.
really
yes.
is a I think people have to be careful.
Yeah, right. Careful what you look for. Careful what you wish for. Are you sure you want to be enlightened? Are you sure you want to lose everything that you take yourself to be? That's what enlightenment is about. It's losing your world, basically. Losing your accustomed world, your familiar world. It's a world, for the most part, for most people, a world of stress, you know, and suffering, and struggle. But we're very attached to, to that world of stress and suffering and struggle, and we don't want to give it up, you know.
Right.
So, you know, if you embark on the journey of awakening, then you have to really be sincerely willing to die. I mean, that's what we say in Zen: die before you die. You know, you die to who you thought you were, and you awaken to who you really are. But often there is a sense of loss. There can be a sense of loneliness, a sense of fear of the unknown. These are all things that can arise. Yeah.
Right, it's really interesting, like how enlightenment can be likened to a death. There was one story you said in the book about a gentleman who became enlightened after just meditating, pretending that he had died.
That's right. Well, that was no gentleman. That was Ramana Maharshi, the great sage of Arunachala in South India, probably the greatest Indian sage of the 20th century.
Wow.
He was 16 years old, and he became curious. He lay down and said, "Okay, I'm going to die now. Let's see what it's going to be like." And he lay down, and a half an hour later, he had dropped the sense of a separate self. He completely awakened. So it can happen like that. It's possible.
Right. I loved reading that story because that was something I had meditated on very profoundly as well, which kind of led to my having out-of-body experiences.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right. Well, the loss of a loved one, like the loss of your mother, often is a very profound motivator and catalyst for awakening.
Well, that's another thing you wrote about is suffering in our world. So suffering is presumably to help us become enlightened. Would you say that that's a fair statement?
Well, I don't know what suffering is for, but it certainly can help us become enlightened. I'm not sure if it has a purpose. But it seems to be part and parcel of being human, is to suffer, right? And it can be a powerful catalyst for awakening, because obviously we don't like to suffer, and we feel very motivated to find a way out of suffering, to find a freedom from suffering. So awakening is the ultimate freedom from suffering, because suffering, you know, unlike pain, which is simply a sensation, suffering is the story that we tell ourselves about pain, basically. You know, suffering is what we create through the story of our lives and the struggles that we create with our minds. Suffering is mind-created. It's not caused by external reality. Pain is, yes, but suffering is our creation. So we can learn to, when we awaken out of the story that creates most of our suffering. So that's a great motivator. Suffering is a great motivator.
Right. Well, what about like past lives? That's another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because, I mean, that kind of relates to the sense of ego and who we are as a person, and seems to happen a lot to people who are having, say, a near-death experience where they become, you know, have an awakening through that path, or for whatever reason. And a number of what I would call paranormal events seem to occur on the pathway to enlightenment, which the yoga, I think the Yoga Sutras talked a lot about that and how they can actually be an impediment to enlightenment.
That's right. Because we can become identified. These experiences can are very seductive often, and we can, you know, mistake them for genuine spiritual enlightenment and get sidetracked. You know, oh wow, you know, beautiful visions, beautiful colored lights, oh, kundalini shooting up my spine and out the top of my head, how wonderful. You know, and you can become kind of enwrapped by that. But that's not, you know, that's not going to bring a relief from suffering. It's just fascinating experiences, you know. It's like kind of going to the spiritual movies, you know.
Right. Well, it seems to me if you're on the pathway to enlightenment, these sort of things are probably going to occur at some point, or may or may not.
They may, yes, they may. And so the idea is not to be distracted by them. They're fine, and in fact, sometimes they may signal a deepening, a deepening of your journey, but they are not enlightenment itself. They're not awakening itself.
All right.
So don't,
certainly there's a lot of stories of the saint, Gerard of Majella, comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
Who experienced, seems to me to have been a really enlightened guy, and he experienced levitations and all manner of bilocation, and used his abilities to help people.
A lot of the great Buddhist masters too had certain what they call siddhis, or you know, magical powers. But in the Buddhist tradition, you know, that's really de-emphasized. You know, you don't get caught by the cities. They're a trap, you know, the tradition I come from. You know, if you have them and can use them for the good of others, then great, but they're not the point, you know. So.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I mean, we used to, in the old days, you know, in medieval times, it certainly seemed that there was a lot more of this kind of stuff being displayed openly.
Magic.
But it's just...
Yeah, and they were the same in Tibetan tradition, too. Tibetans, you know, they had sorcerers who would duel with one another, you know, with their magical powers. And, you know, some of that was related to Buddhist practices, but it was not kind of the mainstream of Buddhism, you know. So, you know, it's fun stuff, but, it can, you know, you can spend lifetimes doing that and never wake up to who you are.
Right. So, I mean, in our day and age, we have so many distractions going on. What can you, advice can you give to the average seeker who is, you know, overwhelmed by work and the problems of everyday life?
Yeah.
What can we do to
challenge? Yeah. We have unique challenges. We don't have the opportunity to go off to a monastery. At least most of us don't. I had the good fortune of being able to do that when I was younger. But I would say, to carve out, if you possibly can, quiet time in your day, time when you can sit quietly. In my book, I describe basic meditation, which is not, you know, technique-oriented, but more about sitting, being open, you know, just listening to sounds, being open to sensations, just being quiet. Silence is a very powerful teacher if we just let ourselves kind of steep in it, like a tea bag in hot water, you know, we just let ourselves steep in the silence. It can be a very powerful teacher. So to carve out times of silence in our day where we just sit quietly can be very helpful. And then, of course, to read, you know, a little bit in spiritual teachings every day, not so much to acquire intellectual knowledge, you know, but more to read these words as pointers to our true nature and let the words resonate inside us, see how they act on us, see how they affect us. So to read in that way, it doesn't have to be more than a page. You know, just read it, let it resonate. Because we're so, entrained by our culture, you know, to believe in the importance of struggle and striving and accomplishment and acquisition and achievement and the importance of being a separate somebody with an impressive resume, including spiritual resume. A lot of people, you know, go to India and go to all these workshops and they develop this spiritual resume, which is no different from any other resume. It's just another story, you know, and that's really emphasized in our culture.
Right.
You know, people who you met and they'll just go on and on about all the, you know, the people they studied with and all the places they've been and all the experiences they've had, you know, you kind of yawning, you're thinking, you know, there's something off about this, right? So we need to be reminded of another dimension of reality. We need to be reminded of the truth of our being, which is not something we can acquire and is always present, pervades everywhere, is the essence of what is. You know, we have to be reminded of the spirit that is, you know, the essence which is behind all phenomenon, because it's easy to forget it. We don't have anything in our culture that points to it.
All right. Well, I love the theme of your book. I mean, I was once in meditation myself, and the thought came to me, well, that relaxation is basically the key to everything.
Mm.
And which I think is part of what your book is saying, is that, you know, it's enlightenment is much closer to us than most people have any idea.
Yes. But
another question,
relaxation is important. I think relaxation is important, especially for most of us who are so wound up, just to learn to let go, let be, open, allow. These are words I like to use, you know?
Right. Well, you know, in my readings, I started, you know, as I said, getting very interested in the subject of awakening, and basically started studying the lives of people who are known as enlightened masters, and would write down a list of, you know, what occurred in their life that led to this awakening. Something that was very common in a lot of them was the presence of a teacher.
Yes.
You talked quite a bit about that in your book. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that. You know, how do we seek a teacher? How do you recognize a teacher when you see one? Do we need a teacher?
Good question. Yeah, you know, I would never say that you need a teacher, but what I can say is that in my own life, teachers have been very important for me. Again, I've had the very good fortune to have some wonderful teachers, and I've had an opportunity to spend time with them, even one-on-one, as well as in small groups, had a very powerful effect on me, because the teacher teaches as much through the power and the quality of his or her presence as through the words, you know. It's
right.
The presence that they embody, that they can't help but, radiate. And that's something that you attune to when you're with them. It's like the truth in them is alive and vibrant, and the truth in you resonates to that, wakes up in their presence. So in that sense, I think being in the presence of a teacher is a powerful catalyst for awakening. Now, if you don't have access to a teacher, then you can certainly read the words of a true teacher, the living words of a true teacher, not dead words that are, you know, kind of conceptual, but words that point directly to the truth. Also, having a teacher, there's something about that that keeps you, how shall I say, aligned with the truth. You know, the teacher is like, teachers can be very strict taskmasters, not in the sense that they demand anything from you, but that they keep coming back again and again to the truth, so they keep you oriented toward the truth, you know?
Right.
So I think a teacher is, again, a very powerful catalyst, but not necessary. Ramana Maharshi, as you mentioned, woke up spontaneously. Then there's the other great teacher of the 20th century, Nisargadatta Maharaj, another Indian. He was with his teacher for 3 years, and he woke up completely, and people asked him, how come it didn't take very long, only 3 years? He said, well, I just believed what my teacher told me completely. I had no doubts. I totally believed it. And I took it to heart, and the truth awoke in me. So, again, teachers, the true teacher. Now, you know, I would say how to find the true teacher. A teacher who wants something from you, watch out. The teacher who offers the truth freely but doesn't have expectations of you, this is the true teacher, you know. When you're in a teacher's presence, the presence of a true teacher, you feel free. You don't feel bound. You know, there are many teachers who seem very attached to their students. They seem to be very attached to the identity of teacher, and what keeps that identity going is having students. I've been with teachers like that. You know, they covet their students, and they're very eager to make you their student. You know, I would be wary of teachers like that. Teachers, true teachers don't care whether you're their student or not. You know, they're totally, you know, they're totally free of that concern.
Right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Stephen Bodian, and we're talking about his brand new book, which has just been released by McGraw-Hill. It's called Wake Up Now, A Guide to the Journey of Spiritual Awakening. I've read the book. It's truly amazing. It contains countless pearls of wisdom from a wide variety of sources and many really new insights that apply to, I think, our modern world. And you can learn more about Stephen at his website, which is his name, actually, www.stephenbodian.org. That's STEPHANBODIAN. And there's more there at the website. And this is a call-in show, so if any of you out there would like to call in and ask our guests a question, or if you have a comment or anything, we'd love to hear from you. I'll give out the number right now. So grab a pencil. The number is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that. It's 888-228-4494. Give us a jingle. We'd love to hear from you. And let's get back to the show. Stephen. Question I wanted to ask you is about karma, because this is something that does come up a lot in the spiritual teachings
of you know various cultures,
yeah.
and seems to be a factor in one's ability to become enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stories of people who have found out they've been doing this sort of thing for years, or lifetimes, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is karma factor? Or can someone who's just, you know, had an evil life just turn around in an instant and become enlightened?
It can happen. Yeah. That's the mystery of karma. You know, karma really refers to cause and effect. Of course, that's what how karma is understood in the East. As far as past lives, I'm an agnostic when it comes to past lives. I don't know from personal experience whether there are past lives or not. There have been some great spiritual masters who were, you know, like Milarepa was one of the great Tibetan teachers who was a highwayman and quite a rogue. I think he had murdered a number of people before he met his teacher. His teacher put him through a series of kind of challenges to, I think, purify his karma. But still, even if you've had a difficult life, you haven't been lived a life fully in integrity, it doesn't prevent you from waking up to who you are. You may have, once you wake up, you may have some material to work through, but it certainly doesn't get in the way of waking up. Because no matter what you do, no matter how far you are from your essential nature, it's always present, it's always available to you. I think people who've done a lot of harm in their lives, deliberate harm, generally have a lot of what are called obscurations or, stories and beliefs and emotions that obscure the truth. So it may be more difficult, but it's not impossible.
Right. Well, I would imagine if you become enlightened, it's sort of, you would know it, right? I mean, people...
Tends to be.
How would you know if you're enlightened?
I like to use the word awakened, enlightenment tends to mean... In the tradition I come from, enlightened means fully enlightened. It means, like, no trace of a separate self left. You know, totally, you are consciousness without any question. There's no sense of, no remnant of the person you thought yourself to be. But, awakening, is very... So tell me your question again. It's laid out here in Texas, by the way. My mind is sort of shutting down. So tell me your question again.
Is awakening something that everyone is working towards? I mean, would you say that this is a process that we're all going to experience eventually?
Maybe in one lifetime or another. That's what you asked me about karma. Who knows, I think that ultimately, I think the truth wants to express itself through everyone. It wants to be revealed. So there's a movement in truth. The Sufis say that God created human beings so that he could know himself and he could love himself. Human beings were the vehicle for God to know and love himself or herself. So in that sense, there's a movement towards truth. I actually was on the island of Kauai, where I lived for a number of years, and I once was out in the very farthest reaches, out in the near Ka Beach, which is at the very end of the road in the island of Kauai. And I went into a restroom, go to the bathroom, and I saw inscribed on the wall there this saying, which I put in my book as a great spiritual statement, which I think is absolutely, absolutely beautiful. I don't know where it comes from, but that which you are seeking is always seeking you.
Wow.
So the sense that the divine is always seeking you, it's seeking to awaken through you. You are being sought as much as you are seeking. So there's a sense in which, yes, the truth wants to awaken through each of us. How long it will take? I don't know, Everyone of us is different. Of course, if we're devoted to to the truth, if we inquire, if we meditate, if we're open, it's more likely to happen. But again, it's a mystery when and if it happens in this lifetime.
Right. Well, that's what your book really got the message across, that everyone does have their own pathway to enlightenment, or awakening, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And, like, for example, I mean, there are some teachers out there who advocate going out and doing everything in the world, having sex, eating all the food you want, and experiencing the whole wide world, and doing, becoming awake through that process, where others teach, you know, austerity, and, you know, be chaste, and don't, you know, go the middle way, I guess, there's a lot of talk about detachment as well, not becoming too attached to things. So
right.
What would you say about all that? Is that a process that people...
Well, I think the most important thing is to find out who you are and to really ask that question very deeply. Who am I? Who is it that is experiencing this life? You know, I see things, I hear things, I think thoughts. That's what we say. I see, I think, I hear. But who is it that's actually seeing and thinking and hearing? It's not the mind, because the mind is just a bunch of thoughts. You know, it's not the body, because the body is just, you know, a bunch of organs and tissue, right? Who is experiencing? Who is experiencing this moment right now? That's the deepest question, and that's what awakening is about. That's the most important question to ask. You know, once we know that, then everything reveals itself. You know.
Right. Well, what about the whole concept of God? And is awakening a process of sort of a union with God? Or?
You could say it's awakening to the fact that we are God already.
Okay.
You know, that we are spirit. We are the divine. You know, that is our essential nature. That is who we are fundamentally. You know, we're also this body-mind, this particular body-mind here, but the essence of life, you know, the spirit that moves through things, the divine movement, is who we are. You know, we can call it consciousness, we can call it spirit, we can call it presence, radiance, awareness, whatever we call it, you know, the essence of what is, the source of what is. You know, we can call that God, but that is who we are. So in that sense, it's recognizing that we have always been God. That is who we are. So it's not becoming one with something that we've been separate from. It's recognizing that oneness that's already there.
All right. Well, there seems to be a resurgence of, you know, interest in spirituality and this whole subject. But on the other hand, it seems the number of enlightened people, or people who have become enlightened, is relatively... I mean, it's a minority, I would say, of the people.
Yeah, definitely a minority,
right.
Yeah. Yes, I think we could say it's a minority.
So... how many people would you, I mean, this is just a wild guess, but are there people who are walking around now who have reached this state of ultimate enlightenment? Or
I think there are a few. I know a few who I would say were, but we'll name names. But yes, I think there are a few. There may be many that we don't know about, you know, but who knows? Who knows? In the Jewish tradition, they say there are always 36 wise men in the world.
Well, I mean, if there are awakened people walking around, I mean, how do you live your life if you're an awakened being and you have, you know, access to this knowledge and power? And
you just live an ordinary life. It's the most ordinary thing imaginable. But you live it without any sense of separation. Once you realize who you are, it's the most humbling thing. It's not, you know, it's not something that, you know, inflates you. It's actually very humbling to see, you know, that you are both nothing and everything. You know, Nisargadatta Maharaj said, love tells me I'm everything, wisdom tells me I am nothing. And between these two, my life flows. So we're both nothing and everything. So the nothing is the recognition of ultimate humility. and at the same time we're everything. And in a certain way, it's just so ordinary. You know, the enlightened people are people you wouldn't recognize if you saw them on the street, unless you were really, really attuned.
Right. And it could be anybody. They could be a young kid walking by.
That's right. Someone cleaning the toilets in the, you know, in the train station. You never know. Well, my friend, I'm actually literally unable to think anymore, so I'm going to have to sign off.
All right. Well,
it's been great to talk with you, Preston. I really enjoyed it. You know, I think you have a great show here, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Well, I sure hope so. I want to thank you very much for coming on to the show. You've been a great guest, and I just want to remind everyone about your book. It's called Wake Up Now, A Guide to the Journey of Spiritual Awakening. And is there any last words you want to give out to people before you have to say?
Yeah, again, just a reminder, it's always available to you. It's not a matter of taking a long journey. You know, just go to the teachings that point directly to who you really are, and you have the potential to wake up in a moment. Okay.
Wow. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night, everyone.
Well, everyone, Stephen Bodian had to go, but I want to thank you all for listening. Before we go, let me just tell you a little story of my own about enlightenment. And that's about lucid dreaming, which is a process I learned how to do following the death of my mother. And lucid dreaming is basically becoming awake in the dream state while you are dreaming. And it is a form of awakening. It's, I think, a step towards spiritual enlightenment and something that Tibetan Buddhists actually use to reach the state of ultimate spiritual enlightenment. They do a process of lucid dreaming where they first become awake in their dreams while they're dreaming. Then they learn how to control the dream state, at which point these powers in the dream state begin to manifest into the physical world, and they realize that the physical world is an illusion like a dream, which you can manipulate in the same way you can manipulate a dream. And that's one pathway of becoming enlightened, which I was very intrigued by because there's a lot of literature out there about how to do lucid dreaming, and it's not hard to do at all. Stephen Bodian recommends in his spiritual teachings that we should constantly ask ourselves, who are we? And what are we experiencing right now? Well, this is a process that's also used to become awake in your dream state. You constantly ask yourself, who am I? Where am I? And what am I doing? And if you ask yourself these questions constantly throughout the day, once an hour, as much as you can, you will ask these questions while you're dreaming, and it will waken you up into the dream state. And that's what happened to me. I began waking up in the dream state and never really got great control of the dream state, still learning, but it kind of translated into out-of-body experiences after that. And what happened to me then is I would have a lot of precognition of future events. Pretty much every time I would go out of body, I would come back with a dream memory of the future, which would happen the next day. And what would happen is I'd say, go to work, and one example that comes to mind is my supervisor in the office walked up to the radio and turned it up really loud, something she had never done before. It was just very strange behavior. And I had dreamt that exact event that morning. There's hundreds like this that I could list. But it's an awesome feeling when suddenly you are in the waking world and your dream plays out before you, because what it's like is becoming awake while you're already awake. I call it waking lucidity, actually, because suddenly you realize that the world is in fact a dream because you dreamt it, and it's playing out right before you. And this is, I think, similar to the Australian dream time, because you don't actually have to be asleep to dream. Dreams are a stream of consciousness, really, and that goes on constantly throughout the day and night. During the day, it's our stream of consciousness, our thoughts. At night, as we fall asleep, these translate into images and dreams. And you can become lucid in your dream state in the sleep as well as lucid while you're awake. And this I started doing meditation on this, and I started having actually waking visions as well. And they first came spontaneously. One happened while I was driving to the bank. I got a vision of a very tall biker-type man with long hair and tattoos and wearing leather and this type of thing, swinging his hair around and acting crazy. I thought, why is this image entering my mind? I just don't understand this. Because it became very overpowering. When I approached the bank, and there right in front of the ATM was this man that I was having a vision of, this very tall, threatening-looking biker-type dude. And having received an advance warning of it, I waited until he left before I approached. But it was shocking to sort of have a waking vision come true, because before, my precognition had been limited to the dream state. So this is when I started to try to develop it with intent. And you can actually just meditate on a person or a place and get visions of it, which are accurate. And one of the hits I had that was really dramatic for me was I meditated on my father, and I thought, huh, he cut his finger. I could see that he cut his finger. And I was going to see him that evening, and lo and behold, when I got there, he had, in fact, cut his finger. So it's very interesting. I think the reason I'm telling you all this is because I think lucid dreaming is a wonderful way for people to start to sort of explore the world of awakening and enlightenment. And it's extremely gratifying. For people who listen to the show know that I'm a big advocate of out-of-body exploring. My book, Out of Body Exploring, A Beginner's Approach, continues to be one of my most popular books, and I'm planning a sequel mighty soon. So that's basically our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. Our guest has been Stephen Bodian, author of the book Wake Up Now, A Guide to the Journey of Spiritual Awakening. I highly recommend this book. It's got pearls of wisdom from many of the so-called enlightened masters throughout the ages, as well as Stephen's own remarkable insights about how enlightenment is really just a breath away and can happen very, very easily if we just devote ourselves to it, and what happens to you when you become enlightened and how to do it. It's really a fun book filled with all sorts of anecdotes and really very profound. So I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you can join us next week when I have another really exciting guest. You're going to love this next guest. Check out the website for more information. I'll get it up as soon as possible. But until then, I want to thank you all for listening, and have a great evening and a wonderful week.
$5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.